From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. And on this day, the House votes to continue a huge tax break for Bath Iron Works, with some conditions. And we'll meet the copepod, a tiny animal that may have big answers about lobster populations. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
A Waldo County District Court judge has ordered that confidential school records of the woman charged in the beating death of her daughter be sealed. As Patty White reports, Sharon Carrillo's attorneys accused the state of misconduct in the way that they obtained the records.
In court on Tuesday, defense attorney Laura Shaw argued that state prosecutors improperly issued a Maine subpoena across state borders when they sought records from a New York school that her client, Sharon Carrillo, attended more than a decade ago. Shaw also said that the state falsely pressured school officials by suggesting that if they didn't comply, they would have to appear in court in Maine on a date when nothing was scheduled. Judge Robert Murray appeared to agree with the defense's arguments and ordered the state to seal Carrillo's school records. He also ordered the state to file an affidavit noting who had viewed the confidential information. Shaw says she's pleased with the outcome.
Because we're also seeking to disqualify the prosecutors on the basis of receiving those records, and that's going to be important information to know.
The judge will consider whether to disqualify state prosecutors at a later date. Assistant Attorney General Leanne Zania told the court that prosecutors made a procedural error, but had sought the records because Carrillo's cognitive abilities may be important to the case. Sharon Carrillo is facing a murder charge in the death of her 10-year-old daughter, Marissa Kennedy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
With several changes, the House has approved a tax break for Bath Iron Works that'll give the shipbuilder $45 million worth of tax relief over 15 years. But they are not getting that money for free, as Mel Leary reports. The company will be expected in return to make investments in the facility and keep the workforce at minimum levels.
The Bath Shipyard's current tax break, worth $60 million, is due to expire next year, 2 decades after it was first approved. But this time around, the legislature's taxation committee wanted BIEW to give something in return. Lawmakers have asked for a $200 million investment to qualify for the package. They've also reduced its scope from $60 million to $45 million. Orono Democrat Ryan Tipping co-chairs the taxation committee.
In this bill, the taxation committee worked to get tighter controls on job numbers, tagging the amount the company can get directly to the amount of jobs that they keep here in the state, with a system of rewards and punishment.
Tipping says the panel's work can serve as a model for all tax breaks designed to attract companies to Maine or to retain businesses already here. And members of the House appear to agree. They approved the package as amended by a wide margin, 117-31. In voting for the package, Representative Bruce Bickford, a Republican from Auburn, argued that Maine is competing against Mississippi, which is providing significant subsidies to the Ingalls Shipyard in that state.
In 2016, they received $45 million. 2015, they received $20 million. 2008, they received $56 million.
Several other lawmakers argued that a long-term tax break is necessary because of the way the Navy awards contracts for ships. They take years to be built. They also pointed to BIW's role as an economic engine for the state, pointing to its payroll of about $350 million a year. But there was also opposition. Yarmouth Democrat Janice Cooper says neither BIW nor its owner, General Dynamics, has proven a need for the state financial aid.
They have not made a case other than fear that BIW will somehow be crippled if we don't give them this paltry sum by their standards, that they will be crippled and possibly closed.
Other opponents also questioned why the shipyard's tax break should take precedence over other projects. Independent Denise Harlow of Portland said the state has many requests for funding for worthy programs that are rejected because of a lack of resources.
We also hear that we cannot afford to do certain things an awful lot. And here we're sitting with a bill before us that gives a large break to a very successful corporation.
The measure now goes to the state Senate, where supporters say they expect strong support. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The State House of Representatives has approved more than $5 million to keep the Downey's Correctional Facility operating for another year. But the vote was still short of what will be needed to override the expected veto of Governor Paula Page, who wants to close the jail. Supporters, including Democratic Representative Ann Perry of Calais, say DCF should keep operating as it is now.
The Downey's Community Correctional Facility is actually working as a pre-release program. They have the programs, they have the people who are doing the work.
Opponents argue the existing facility needs renovations to keep operating. Lawmakers are also looking at legislation to create a new pre-release center in Washington County. Construction costs were approved in a past legislature, but would still need an operating appropriation. The town of Cranberry Isles will get a $1.3 million grant from the USDA to help cover the costs of building a high-speed internet network. The town's a cluster of five islands, three of which will get service from this project. Jim Fortune is the administrative assistant for the selectmen of Cranberry Isles. He says the town thought getting high-speed internet was so important that it voted last year to do the project, even if it didn't get the grant to pay for it.
For a town the size of Cranberry Isles, a $1.3 million project is huge. I believe it would represent the second largest investment the town had made.
But Fortune says it's vital for any community to have high-speed internet if it wants to stay economically viable.
It's getting tough to sustain yourself economically in some of these smaller communities, especially if they're remote or somewhat isolated. These places still offer a great place to live, but you have to have that economic connection. You have to have that vitality in your community. If you don't have that, you're going to just keep glittering.
The project is already being built by Machias-based Axiom Technologies, and Fortune says it's expected to be finished by June. And new science is bearing down on a poorly understood part of the North American lobster's diet. It turns out that a tiny crustacean's abundance may explain expected declines in Maine's lobster harvest. Fred Bever reports.
The Gulf of Maine brims with hundreds of varieties of these transparent crustaceans known as copepods.
If you've ever swum in the ocean, you've swallowed mouthfuls of them.
That's Nick Record, a computational ocean ecologist at the Bigelow Laboratory in Boothe Bay. Recently, he's put himself at the computational nexus of a handful of data sets that track a particular copepod in the Gulf of Maine called Calanus finmarchicus.
They look sort of like aliens. They have one eye. They have these long antennae that they use to sort of detect changes in fluid motions in the water, and that's how they kind of get around or detect predators. I guess you could imagine like lobsters without claws and really tiny, like the size of a grain of rice or smaller.
But they billow around the sea by the billions. Rich in fats, they are the nutritional staff of life for endangered right whales, herring, and as New England scientists now have reason to believe, the iconic North American lobster. The clues to this connection can be found in the ocean waters off New Hampshire.
You're familiar with the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant.
Joshua Carloni, a research scientist in New Hampshire's Fish and Game Division, explains that as part of its permit to go online back in the 1980s, Seabrook's owners agreed to an extensive survey of the seas around its coastal location.
Sampling for different finfish species, sampling for lobsters with traps, lobster larvae, and other types of zooplankton.
The result is a decades-long treasure trove of data, but it was sort of overlooked until Carloni came along and decided to check up on a question that's been vexing lobster research for years.
Why do we have all these eggers but not a lot of babies?
Baby lobsters, that is. Carloni wanted to explore why, at a time when the waters off Maine are chock full of egg-bearing lobsters and very early-stage larvae, there's been a drop-off in the midterm stages. That includes small but fully formed lobster, referred to as the babies. Carloni had a hunch they might be starving to death. So he used the Seabrook data to compare their abundance over time with the presence of suspected food sources. None showed a correlation with baby lobster decline except Calanus finmarchicus.
A pretty strong correlation. It suggested to us that potentially you have all these eggs hatching in the Gulf of Maine. They could be limited by food.
There are really very few aha moments in science.
Rick Wally is a marine scientist at the University of Maine's Darling Marine Center in Walpole. He's been tracking baby lobsters that settled to the seafloor off New England for 30 years. He's shown that the settlers' decline may predict coming declines in the adult lobster harvest. But getting data to explain what's going on, he says, has been like looking into a black box. Carloni's work on the Calanus connection was something of a revelation.
To have one of these moments where you see these correlations and it opens a whole new box of different questions, it's rather exciting.
Wally says it's not a sure bet baby lobsters are dying off due to a lack of Calanus finmarchicus to munch on. They might be settling in new places, or lobsters and Calanus F might be under pressure from bigger predators.
Such as jellyfish are a likely suspect.
There's a lot of uncertainty in an ecosystem such as the Gulf that is changing fast in response to climate change. Wally is one of many scientists in New England taking a closer look at copepods as a dynamic element. Among them, Nick Record, who described Calanus as one-eyed aliens. He's studying the travel patterns of the endangered right whale and whether they can be anticipated by the abundance of the whale's staple food, Calanus finmarchicus.
Well, we're finding some surprises.
Record and collaborators are using a supercomputer at the Bigelow Labs to crunch the numbers from multiple data sets.
Few scientists had predicted that at the temperatures the Gulf of Maine are at now, there would no longer be any Calanus. But we haven't seen them leave.
Instead, their seasonal abundance in the Gulf appears to be changing, with a springtime surge of Calanus finmarchicus near the U.S. coast and a decline farther east in the fall. Scientists are now trying to pinpoint what's causing those trends and what they could mean for whales, lobsters, and other species that depend on a healthy Gulf of Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.